Hello and welcome. This time we're chatting with a true game changer, someone who's become a legend in internet marketing circles. These days, he's known as a digital marketer, an author, a speaker, a software developer, an online marketing educator, and marketing consultant. It's a real honor for me to welcome to the show, Mike Vilsaime.
Probably the best intro I've ever gotten. What a true professional. So happy to be here, excited to give out some great content.
You're too kind. Well, you've become one of the biggest names in internet marketing. There's no arguing with that. Was that always an ambition for you, Mike?
Wow. I think I have to be, completely transparent here. I've never been asked that question. When you meet me, I'm probably the guy that when people finally meet me, especially in person, they'll say, "What a nice guy! What a what an easygoing guy! Very, very unselfish." You know, what different types of things. And I only say that because I've heard that. I'm kind of laid back, but boy, deep inside there is a driver of me that wants to be number one at everything I do. I'll just give you a couple examples. I was the type of guy that, when we would play foosball in my office, I'm going to try to say this as PG as I can. I would win 9 out of 10 games. I used to sing the Cranberry song when I would start doing a comeback on somebody. I'd start singing, "I'm in your head, I'm in your head," and I'd score another goal. And I would relish, kind of the way Michael Jordan did, in winning a game. And when I'd lose, I'd put this big smile and go, "You got me," high five, and everything. I would go into my office and grab a pillow and scream, the F word, right into it, make sure nobody heard it. But yeah, so there's a competitive nature to me. I think part of it comes from wanting to fit in and wanting to prove. It's something I don't talk about much. Maybe I've spoken about it once or twice to a couple of different people. It's just something that me and my brother have recently come to realize. And I don't think I've ever spoken about it publicly, but my dad and my mom were born in Haiti. So you give me a Dominican, anybody that's Dominican, especially I'm from New York, and it's, hey, Dominican, you talk about an Italian, Italian pride, kiss me, I'm Irish. People have this pride of their culture, to be Russian, to be whatever it is, mm-hmm. right? Puerto Rican, Jamaican man, all these different things, right? And then to be Haitian, I'm sure was the same thing. Not when I grew up. I grew up born 1967, so I'm in high school in 9th and 10th grade, and this virus comes out called the AIDS virus, right? And you can imagine, right, you didn't have the 24-hour news cycle, the internet and everything like that, and it came on a little bit slower than the coronavirus, but this thing, if you're old enough to remember, it scared the hell out of people. And when people didn't know, if you can get it by touching someone, by looking at someone, we didn't know that it was through, bodily fluids and intercourse and blood and things like that. So my dad was a very well-respected person in the automotive industry. And he went for an interview one day. There's a Mercedes-Benz dealership, and they're loving him. They're absolutely loving him. And all of a sudden, they bring the staff in, and all the staff is like, "Lionel, your accent, where are you from? Is that French or Canadian?" He's like, "No, actually, I'm from Haiti, and it's a French accent that you're hearing." And he's, "Oh, wow, that's beautiful." And all of a sudden, one lady goes, "Haiti, isn't that where AIDS comes from?" And everybody's like, everybody's face just went pale. And then my father, they said, "Lionel, are you from Haiti?" And so my dad lied and said, "Oh, no, my parents were from Haiti." And they were like, oh, good, we got a little scared there. So my dad came home and told me and my brother, quote, "Don't right now with the AIDS virus," and this was years before Magic Johnson, "do not tell people that you're from Haiti." And then, believe it or not, my friends had known. And I started hearing things from my friends like their parents, you know, weren't allowed to play with me anymore and stuff like that. And, you know, I would be like, hey, what's going on? And, you know, kids will be kids. It's because your family has AIDS. And I'd be like, what? You know, I'm talking 10th grade, wow. You know, not 7 years old. Right. Mm-hmm. So I had to hide about who I was. And my brother, we recently had a talk about that. I said, when did you start telling people you're Haitian? He says, maybe 3 years ago. So we had this thing that we would say we were, French Canadian or Martinique or something like that. And when you would ask me, it was like this thing that, like, you know, you knew you were a fraud. Talk about imposter syndrome. Somebody would ask you, because if you look at me, I could pass for a Dominican, a Puerto Rican, a Mexican, an Iranian, a Persian, an Iraqi, Middle Eastern, Hawaiian, or a Filipino. You put me in that environment. If I walk into a bodega in Hempstead, New York, they're going to start talking to me in Spanish. And if I'm in Dubai, I'm going to look, you know, I have this very, very worldly ethnic look. It's probably people, they look at me and they say, Mike, you have a very interesting look. Do you mind if I ask where you're from? And then I say, what do you think? And then they're saying, I don't know, either Filipino, Arab. It's really tough to tell. And I say Haitian, you know, and they're like, oh my God, never would have guessed. And so I had that question my whole life. And as soon as I started seeing that question, I would start sweating. And I'd want to get off of it very, very quick, because I didn't know if they knew something different, or there'd be another friend around that would go, that's not true. You're Haitian, right? So, oh my goodness, I can't even tell you how tough this was for me. So, so I think that created something inside of me that wanted to fit in, like on a deep level. Like when because I could talk to you about the things that I was competitive at. I wrestled in high school, and I wrestled my brother, my friends, all time. It was the most important thing in the world to me. And I wasn't the best wrestler in practice, but I worked really hard. And there was always this guy, Mike Del Pilar. He was the varsity guy, and I was the junior varsity guy. And he had more experience than me. He was varsity the previous year. But I knew I'd practice a certain move. And I knew he was a better wrestler than me. But we used to have these things called wrestle-offs, because the best man wrestles on Friday night. That's the way it is. Mm-hmm. Or Saturday, whenever we'd wrestle. So they were very fair that way. It was none of this, you know, participation trophy stuff, right? Back then, you earned your spot on the varsity team. So I would go on the wrestle-off. I'd walk up there very shy. I would play very, very coy. And then as soon as we would go in, I would blast, and I beat this kid every single week. Every single week. And he'd beat me up in practice. And the coach, I remember the coach's face would go, all right, Phil Zimay, because I wasn't Phil Same back then. That's an internet marketing thing. That's for another story. But they say, all right, Phil Zimay, varsity, Del Pilar, junior varsity. And he'd throw his sneakers at the wall and take off his headband. And I had the same mentality going into the wrestling match. So I was, I wrestled my high school year. I went 18-0-1. And when I was 18-0, I had never been pinned. And I could tell you that the very last match that I had, I went on to this guy. His name was Craig Redding. And he went to the States. And my very, very last match, this kid taps, you know, the handshake thing. We start going. About 2.5 seconds in, I was blinded by him doing a fireman's carry. His arm and bicep went, he tucked in, and his arm and bicep right into my crotch, pretty much nearly knocked me out. I saw stars, and I heard, and I got up and I said to my coach, it's the most embarrassing thing ever. I said, what happened? He goes, you got fucking pinned. That's what happened. And it was my last match of my wrestling career. I never played in college or anything like that. And like that, telling that story today, like completely, completely haunts me that I was 18-0. And I being on a wrestling team, I don't know if you did any high school or college sports or something. To me, I wasn't in the military, but I can only say it had this camaraderie of there was some brotherhood that was going on there. And, you know, to walk off in quote-unquote disgrace, those things lived with me. I remember bowling a perfect game almost nearly, and I missed a strike by one pin in the 10th frame, and like how I cried for days about that. My dad was trying to tell me, you know, he'd call me Keek, please get over it. You have to get over. I couldn't get him out of my room. So yes, there's this competitive thing inside of me, and I don't necessarily think consciously I said I want to be on the Mount Rushmore of internet marketers, but I get motivated by seeing other people's marketing. I say that's some magic that they're doing right there. How can I apply that to the outcomes that I want to achieve? I don't want to emulate somebody. I already have a goal in mind. I have an end game, and I see the means given to me by somebody else. What the heck are they doing with that video? They just made a cinematic movie. That's never been done before. Can that work for this? And then I'll try to apply it. So in that sense, I want to be the best that I can be. There's a book by Jim Collins called Good to Great. And the first six words of that book, it could be five, we'll count them, but I think it's six, is good is the enemy of great. So that's six words. That's how the book starts. Good is the enemy of great. I remember looking at that, and it took me about 2 minutes to turn the page. I said, what the hell does that mean? Mm-hmm. Good is the enemy of great. And basically what it means is in some sense, you know, your higher power, God, the universe, you know, put us out here with a potential. And isn't it a beautiful thing to strive towards potential in everything we do, in our faith, our relationships, our health, our fitness, our finances, our relationships with our kids, people, everything. We have an opportunity. There is something great in us. In that stone lies, you know, the Michelangelo sculpture, right? And so for us to be good at anything is really a disservice to what our true potential is. And that's what I took from it. And I found that to be profound. I said, you might have a few questions. I can't help myself but go deep into even the simplest of questions. So that's a long answer to a short question.
Oh, don't worry. I love it. I love the fact as well that you've harnessed your competitive streak and you are using it in a really positive way. I think that's quite refreshing to hear because, you know, I think a lot of people look at those of us who are competitive and it's almost seen as a bad thing, whereas actually if you are competitive and you want to get out there and you want to change the world, everybody uses Steve Jobs as the example of someone who, you know, perhaps he knew what he wanted and was able to push forward. And I think that it's great that there's a poster child and that people look up to people like Steve Jobs. But in terms of, you know, your own career, Mike, and you know the way you've been able to motivate yourself, who's inspired you, would you say?
Poof, that's one and only my dad. There is my dad and there's nobody else. I can write a book and there'll be different people in there that I will give credit to, and there are people in internet marketing certainly that have paved the way for me. You know, that are invaluable, but my character, mm-hmm. my dad, he's a legend of a man. He's a hero to me and everybody in my family. He was raised right, maybe a little too tough from his his military dad. I will say this: some of the things that the way that I was raised and my brother was raised, not my sister, but my brother, the way we were raised, quite frankly, would probably have put my father in jail in today's world. Right. And I have no issue with it. You know, my father came from the spare the rod, spoil the child school. He never hit me with his hand. He would use the belt. And it was never out of rage. It was never uncontrolled. He would come home in this great mood, and my mother would be saying, wait till your father comes home. Wait till your father comes home. I mean, why? Because my mother said 9 times, don't do something. And I went out in the back and painted the house or something ridiculous, right? When she told me not to. Leave that there. You're going to spill the paint on my brand new deck. You know, and she's not looking, and what do? I spill the paint. So my father would come home, And he wouldn't be more upset that I spilled the paint. It's that, you know, did your mother tell you not to do that? And did you disobey her? It was one of those types of things with my dad. And he'd come home in this great mood, and I'd go in and hug his leg. And he'd be, hey, Kiki, how are you? And then, do you know what your son did today? And my dad would be, is that true? He'd say, go in your room. I'm going to meet you there in 15 minutes. He'd have his dinner or whatever. He'd come in, and he'd say, do you know what you did? Blah, blah, blah. He'd say, okay. And he, you know, I'd put my hands behind. He'd say, move your hands. I'd get the belt. You know, my brother would get it too or whatever, and we'd be crying like anything. And then, you know, but it really was the type of thing that I'd be looking over at my brother and I'd be smiling. And then my dad would go, he's laughing. And my dad would go, is this funny to you? And I'd get another one. It was just a discipline thing. And, you know, just another example, my dad had this weird thing that he would do. When we'd get in trouble, it was on your knees. That was the thing. We'd have to go into the corner of the room on our knees. We weren't allowed to slouch. We'd have to put our hands, you know, like I Dream of Jeannie style, and, you know, cross fold them over our chest. And we'd have to be on our knees for 30 minutes. And you know what would happen when I'd get off? I would go to my dad and I'd say, Dad, I'm sorry. And he would say, come here, sit next to your dad, watch TV together. I love the guy. Everything I did was, I had to be disciplined a certain way. Now, I'm not advocating for the belt or anything like that. I don't have kids, and I don't know what the right thing to do, but I don't have any issues with the way that I was raised. And so my dad taught me a couple of things. I wasn't one of those kids. I remember when I would say something, my friend would say something like, I want to get that bike. And I would say something like, oh, cool. When are you going to get it? Are you going to talk to your parents? And it would be like August. And they would say something like, yeah, my dad's going to get it to me for Christmas. And that to me was the weirdest thing. I was like, well, that's weird. You know, and just in my head, it's probably the right way, right? In my head, it was like, why are you getting something for Christmas? That's a long time from now if your parents can afford it. And so my dad's attitude was more of a reward system. If I wanted the bike, my dad created a contract. I had to mow the lawn 6 times, never be late. And he literally had me sign these things. It was on the refrigerator. And I'd call him from work and he'd be like, Keith, did you mow the lawn? And I'd probably lie and say, yes, I'm going to come home. And if it's not cut, you're not getting the bike. And, so I'd go mow the lawn. And I had, so for me, everything was a reward-based system with grades and allowance. Everything was tied into this performance. And he would call me top shelf. Even today, he calls me top shelf when we talk. And, you know, his belief was, you're not better than anybody, and nobody's better than you, but you can do anything you put your mind to. And that came from him coming back from the car dealerships, at coming into the house at 11 o'clock at night. And I'd be sleeping. And he'd come in and he'd go, Keek. I'm like, yeah, what's up? Come on, come keep your dad company. Come into the kitchen. And I went, well, how'd your day go? I'm like, Dad, I'm tired. And I'd be sitting there like falling asleep. And he'd be there with his crackers and his Camembert cheese. And he would be giving me lessons like, Keek, let me tell you something about the way the Italians negotiate. Don't ever ask them to sign anything until you shake their hands. These people are people of pride, and they will tell you things like, I've given you my word, and my word is more important than anything on a pen. And like he literally gave me life lessons about cultures and different things like that. So to me, again, a long answer to a short question, my dad is the person that formed me.
And in terms of, you know, the motivation as you were getting into your marketing career, because, I mean, you've achieved so much. There's been Butterfly Marketing, which we'll touch on in a few moments. There's Webinar Jam. There's the Evergreen Business System, Kartra. And, of course, now there's you know, your Groove Funnels and Groove Pages and whatever. How proud are your parents of what you've achieved?
I'm because that's a bifurcated question, right? And so let's start with my dad, so we can easily segue. My dad is so proud. I'll spare you the reading of the text, but literally he sent me a text the other day talking about how proud he is of me and how he talks to people about what I do. And if you know my dad, I have to warn you and warn him. You come to my house, I say, my dad's a talker, and he will trap you in a corner and start talking to you about the French Revolution and health and all these different things. And you'll say, oh, no, Mike, I can't wait to see your dad. And then I'll see you, he'll get you. And I look over and you're sending me the signal. And then to my dad, I have to tell him, don't trap people with your, you know, this intellectual conversations, and you can see where I get it from. I can talk a lot. And he'll say, Keek, I've been around for a long time. I can read bodily cues. I know when people don't. No, he can't. He'll talk your ear off. So yes, he's very proud of me. My mom, on the other hand, gave me a completely different upbringing, completely different outlook on life. I would win, talk about being competitive. I won the Presidential Physical Fitness Award all 6 years. It meant the world to me. I was the fastest kid in the school. I had the fastest time in the 600-yard dash. You know, just being the fastest, all these things just meant stuff to me. So when I had the Presidential Physical Fitness Award, I came home and I left it right on the kitchen counter. I came back after playing, you know, softball or kickball or whatever out on the street with my friends, and I came back and it was gone. And I said to my mom, Mom, where's my Presidential Physical Fitness Award? This is just typical. I don't remember how it would be, but I can give you a typical scenario. It would have been, I don't know what you're talking about. Mom, you're the only one here. I left it right here. There was certificates here. I don't know. It's not there. If it was that important to you, you wouldn't have left it there. What are you kidding? And so I'm searching all over, and guess where I find it? And this is like a patch, not just a piece of paper. It's just a certificate signed by Jimmy Carter, you know, probably, you know, automated, right? But to me, I didn't know that then. And a certificate. And I've had for 5 years prior, this is my sixth, and I'm going to get it sewn on. And it's now in the garbage with spaghetti sauce on it.
No.
Yes. Yeah. And that was my mom. She would go clean my room, and I had the Thurman Munson card from the New York Yankees, which was worth a lot, unwrapped, right? You know, he had died from the Yankees, and everybody's saying, you need to save these things. Gone. Just thrown out. And, you know, you shouldn't leave them on under your bed. You know, all those different things. And just like one more thing, you know, you lose a dog, you lose a cat, or her mother would die. Not much to shed a tear. My mom was a very, very strong person, and her answer to somebody was, to everything was, you know, ours is not to question why, ours is to do or die. She would say things like, you live and learn, tomorrow's another day, all roads lead to Rome, if we were lost. My mother, you couldn't rattle the woman, literally nothing. And so the things that were important to me, she would just tell me, you know, Mike, stop complaining about things that can be replaced. This, you're not talking about health. You're not talking about this. And so she was a very matter of fact person. And I think perhaps, you know, from there, is she proud of me? I'm sure she is. But I have a thing that I do with my mom, because she never ever said I love you up until just recently. So I would just say to, you know, Michelle, watch this. You know, I'd be putting it on mute and going, watch this. We're getting off the phone. All right, Mom. And she'd be like, okay, Michael, it's been great talking to you. Make sure to call your mother often. I haven't heard from you in 3 months. You should just call me for my birthday. Yeah, you're right, Mom. All right. Have a good day. I love you. Okay, bye-bye. And I'd say to Michelle, see that? She can't say it. So about a year ago, I did one of those things, and she said, love you too. And I like literally almost like broke down in tears, because I was with Michelle, and I was like, I got all, you know, choked up. And I said, wow, she actually said, I love you. Now she's saying it more. But that's the type of, to tell you the difference of personalities between my mom and my dad. My dad wanted to be conversational, and my mother was, you know, here's your food. Hardworking, go to work, do shopping. You know, she was there to raise the kids, and you know, leave her alone. Let her go watch her things and TV. She liked to read books.